Good evening. My name is Dan Peek. Welcome to the WDRT Monthly Review, a look back at this past month's news stories for December 2021 and a review of the top stories for the year. We hope you will offer your feedback by emailing monthlyreview@wdrt.org. As a reminder, I am broadcasting by phone from Sheboygan, having moved. Jim Hallberg has now designated me foreign correspondent. Starting in 1927, Time magazine has highlighted a person, group, or idea that shaped the year. In 1927, this was Charles Lindbergh. Following his historic transatlantic flight, years before he was suspected of being a Nazi sympathizer for his World War II non-interventionist politics and comments about Jews and race. While tame by comparison to current Republican politics, Lindbergh offered, "We can have peace and security only so long as we band together to preserve that most priceless possession, our inheritance of European blood. Only so long as we guard ourselves against attack by foreign armies and dilution by foreign races." Noted auto pioneer and anti-Semite Henry Ford noted, "When Charles comes out here, we only talk about the Jews." In 1941, former President Franklin Delano Roosevelt wrote, "If I should die tomorrow, I want you to know this. I am absolutely convinced Lindbergh is a Nazi." Before 1999, there were only three women of the year. The first, for 1936, was American socialite and wife of the Duke of Windsor, the former King Edward VIII. Their intention was to marry, and her status of divorcee caused a constitutional crisis that led to Edward's abdication. It wasn't until 1963 before a black Dr. Martin Luther King was bestowed with the honor. Lindbergh, Simpson, and King. As a mirror, what do those choices reflect about nationalism, patriarchy, and race looking back from 2021? Moving past the history, you likely know that the 2021 person of the year is Elon Musk. I will not attempt to add to your knowledge of Musk beyond noting that he is purportedly the wealthiest person in the world. I will simply offer this quote from Mars Society founder Dr. Robert Zubrin. "Genius is a word that is frequently associated with Musk. Wisdom is not." I instead have two other nominees to put forward. My view, there is such a thing as an honorable politician. I will follow the lead of Dave Remnick of The New Yorker and voice support for Representative Jamie Raskin, Democrat from Maryland. One day after the burial of his 25-year-old son, Thomas Raskin, by suicide, Jamie Raskin was at the Capitol to witness the January 6th Trumpster violent assault on the U.S. Capitol and our democracy. Raskin is regarded as a brilliant lawyer, an anti-war activist, the Dem leader of the second Trump impeachment trial, and currently serving on the January 6th commission. In January 2021, Raskin told NPR, "The Constitution applies on your very first day of office. It applies on your last day in office and everything in between. This violent attack, insurrection against the Union, is the worst presidential crime in American history and would set a terribly dangerous precedent if we didn't respond to it." Raskin told Remnick, "January 6th was not the final act, but perhaps the prologue to a titanic struggle between democracy and the violent authoritarianism in America." But my person of the year for 2021 is 18-year-old climate activist Greta Thunberg. Thunberg has castigated leaders for failing future generations with their fairy tales of eternal economic growth. As she said in one speech, "How dare you? You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words." Thunberg summarized climate crisis political goals and promises in an opening speech to the United Nations Climate Change pre-conference ahead of COP26, skewering world leaders, describing their promises as 30 years of blah, blah, blah. A few days ago in an interview with the Washington Post, Greta was asked about her comment that even her blah, blah, blah was watered down. She explained, "As we all know, or as we might know, the so-called F word was included for the first time in this document, fossil fuel, which makes you wonder what they have been doing these decades without ever even mentioning fossil fuels for a problem which, to a very, very large extent, is caused by fossil fuels. And instead of phasing out coal, the document's language became phasing down. So yeah, that is one very clear example." So Greta highlights one top story, climate crises. As a December 14th Washington Post headline noted, "Climate change has destabilized the Earth's poles, putting the rest of the planet in peril." Oregon State University glaciologist Aaron Pettit presented research in early December, noting the Thwaites ice shelf could collapse within the next 3 to 5 years, unleashing a river of ice that could dramatically raise sea levels. Aerial surveys document how warmer conditions have allowed beavers to invade the Arctic tundra, flooding the landscape with their dams. Large commercial ships are increasingly infiltrating formerly frozen areas, disturbing wildlife and generating disastrous amounts of trash in many Alaska Native communities. Climate impacts compounded the hardships of the coronavirus pandemic, leading to food shortages among people who have lived off this land for thousands of years. Representative Raskin highlights another top story, Trump's January 6th inspired assault on our Capitol and democracy. Though I would feel equally as strongly about Representative Pramila Jayapal, Democrat, Washington, chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, or voting rights activist Stacey Abrams. Raskin also serves as the lead into another Trump top story, the big lie with the January 6th assault. So I gave him my vote. We are almost a full year past the January 6th violent assault, but we are seeing important insights daily. Here are two from this past week. History professor and blogger Heather Cox Richardson offers this December 24th report of the progress made by the January 6th commission. The Washington Post reported that the House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol is weighing the possible criminal referral for former President Trump, focusing on the 187 minutes before Trump's urging his supporters to march on the Capitol and the video he finally released telling them to stop. During that period, Trump was inundated with text messages and phone calls begging him to call off his supporters. Famously, when then House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, Republican of California, urged Trump to stop the violence, then President Trump responded, "Well, Kevin, I guess these people are more upset about the election than you are." Committee Chair Benny Thompson, Democrat, Mississippi, told Washington Post reporters that the committee is interested in why the president delayed more than 3 hours before intervening. He reiterated that the committee wants to know if Trump was derelict in his duty and whether he criminally obstructed Congress from counting the certified ballots. Interfering with an official proceeding is a crime. The second January 6th assault news item from this week, the Green Bay sweep. Commentators revel in explaining the concept, sometimes burying the lead. The Green Bay Packers of the Vince Lombardi era, the 60s, built an offense around one power play. Every team facing the Packers knew that they would repeatedly run a play of sweep that was so effective that it could not be stopped. The Trumpster interpretation of this, don't hide your plan, just execute it so well it can't be stopped. Trumpsters plotted the pressure of Congress during the electoral vote certification that took place on January 6th. They would create enough dissent and confusion to force the House of Representatives or the Supreme Court to resolve the outcome of the election, maybe with the help of the six contested states gaining a chance to use Republican legislatures to alter their election outcomes in favor of Trump. Trumpsters were confident that the House and the Supreme Court were sufficiently pro-Trump that he would be reelected by one body or the other. The plan was conceived and named by former Trump trade advisor Peter Navarro with the help of former Trump advisor and loyalist Steve Bannon. Yes, the Trump pardoned Steve Bannon, the Lord of Chaos. The other key Trumpster Navarro drags into this is longtime Trump advisor, also Trump pardoned, Roger Stone, who loves to tell the story over the years of how he ran the same plot in Florida, the Brooks Brothers riot that turned the Florida election results via a biased Florida Supreme Court to former President George Bush, defeating former Vice President and Dem candidate Al Gore. The Trumpster goal was 100 senators or representatives that would be enough power, to execute the power, the play, and force the issue to put the election in the hands of the House or Supreme Court. We can leave this here as a cliffhanger, but it's interesting to note that Navarro's admission claims that the ensuing violence foiled the plan, and he and other Trumpster insiders blame Bannon for the violence. Fascinating for many reasons, but clearly flawed with contradictions, but who doesn't love having the argument out loud for all of us to witness? The next top story for 2021, a challenge for hundreds of years prior and likely many years into the future, social justice. We closed 2021 with a jury convicting a former suburban Minneapolis police officer of first and second degree manslaughter in the fatal shooting of Dante Wright during an April traffic stop. The mostly white jury deliberated for about 27 hours before finding Kimberly Potter, a former Brooklyn Center, Minnesota police officer, guilty of all charges in the killing of Wright, an unarmed 20-year-old black man. Potter's conviction capped a year of racially charged trials that gained national prominence, including the November conviction of three men in the murder of Ahmaud Arbery and the acquittal of Kyle Rittenhouse in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Wright's death made headlines during the final days of the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin in the killing of George Floyd, two overlapping stories through most of 2021, two stories that underscore our lack of confidence with our justice system standing up for the rights of all citizens, equal rights for all. Leading to our next top story, I will summarize Senator Rand Paul's Republican Kentucky recent awkward definition of voter fraud as when the wrong party wins by registering too many votes. His words: it's hard to pick one aspect of voter suppression to maintain the control of elections by a minority party and a minority of voters, but the Supreme Court turning its back on voting rights and specifically gerrymandering has opened the door with Republicans rushing in to secure minoritarianism and enact authoritarianism to preserve their advantage. With the benefit of a SCOTUS blind eye, Republican-controlled legislatures are remapping or preserving voting districts to favor Republican candidates. In Wisconsin, this takes the form of a Wisconsin Supreme Court December ruling that favored Republicans by stating it saw no need to make significant changes to the maps that have helped the GOP win legislative majorities over the last 10 years. Governor Tony Evers, Democrat, submitted redistrict plans to the court that, while not as favorable to Republicans, would still maintain their majorities. Associated Press explains the latest Wisconsin gerrymandering news this way. The maps I'm submitting today are an improvement from the gerrymandering maps we have and the Republican maps I vetoed last month, Evers said in a statement. But I want to be clear, the people of Wisconsin overwhelmingly support nonpartisan redistricting in this state, and I will continue to fight for a nonpartisan redistricting process as long as I'm governor. Well, that's not clear to me. But moving on, Republicans currently have a 61-38 majority in the Assembly and 21-12 majority in the Senate. They also hold 5 of 8 congressional seats in a state that voted for Biden, the Democrat, for president. Evers' maps, as he said, would narrow, but not erase, this bias. This feels like the right spot to share the latest on the Wisconsin audit of the 2020 election. But one final thought with Wisconsin gerrymandered maps. A perfect example of how to do this lives next door in Michigan. Michigan's new electoral maps is substantially more fair than the previous maps drawn by Republicans. It got there because voters voted for it by way of a ballot initiative put forward by voters. Sadly, this is not an option for Wisconsin. We do not have the same democratic process available to us. Back to our Wisconsin vote audit, a Republican-ordered nonpartisan report was released in late October finding no widespread voter fraud or wrongdoing, but still offered a dozen recommendations updating policies and laws. Republicans love their invention of fraud as a means of further restricting voter access, think voter IDs, to fight non-existent fraud but on steroids. True to the GOP cry fraud playbook, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, Republican Rochester, called for the resignation of Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf following a press conference held by Racine County Sheriff Christopher Smelling, where he outlined concerns about 2020 election administration in nursing homes. Smelling had also referred recommendations for criminal charges against 5 of the 6 members of the Wisconsin Elections Commission to Racine County District Attorney Patricia Hansen, a Republican, for the same alleged issues. Wolf does not intend to roll over. I think in some ways that they think I'm an easy target. I'm not, she said. I think that anybody that's looked at the integrity of the work that I've done, the dedication that I've given to this position, the support I've provided to our heroic local election officials, I don't think that the claims have any bias, any basis. Wolf said she has an obligation as the state's nonpartisan chief election official to rise above the criticism. Democrats say the Wisconsin Review is yet another effort to justify Trump's lies about widespread fraud costing him the 2020 election. What this is an effort to perpetuate the big lie, said Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call, a Democrat. I think this is really about 2022 and 2024, Call said. I mean, when the insurrection happened, I was hopeful that we would see people who have been attacking our democratic institutions realize that they had gone way too far and take a step back. But I think what we've seen is that even though the insurrection ended, the spirit of the insurrection has remained with us. And that is in the halls of state legislatures. It's in these fake investigations like the one going on here. This is an effort to reduce confidence in our election results and to ultimately potentially overturn an election, he said. Speaking of amended civil rights, consider the U.S. Supreme Court and abortion, starting with they lied. Supreme Court nominees Brett Kavanaugh, Neil Gorsuch, and Amy Coney Barrett lied during their Senate confirmation hearings. Take Kavanaugh as an example. Roe v. Wade and how Kavanaugh would rule in a challenge came up multiple times, and he repeatedly emphasized Roe v. Wade was, in his words, settled law, settled as a precedent of the Supreme Court, and should be entitled to respect under principles of stare decisis, the notion that precedent should not be overturned without strong reason. And Kavanaugh was given the opportunity to honor his testimony when the Supreme Court heard arguments in a case that has an abortion provider, the Center for Reproductive Rights, suing the state of Mississippi over a new law that bans most abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Given the opportunity, Kavanaugh instead offered a lengthy list of past Supreme Court cases that had been ruled against precedent. Kavanaugh lectured about court rulings overturning settled law. It's hard to imagine this court standing with Roe v. Wade. They lied. Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and Barrett. There's not a court ruling as yet, but this court will likely take away a citizen's right. Repeat top story, deja vu, it's COVID. We're tired of it, but it's not through with us. We are weeks away from the January 2020 first confirmed case in the United States. Since then, the U.S. has experienced 53 million confirmed cases and 820,000 U.S. persons have died. Meanwhile, we're setting new daily records for the number of cases with an average of 345,000 daily and a new daily record of 582,044 cases compared to a daily average of 250,000 on January 12, 2021. Wisconsin was in the top five affected state for weeks this fall, but has now dropped below the top 20 as hotspots evolve. Wisconsin had an average of 4,800 new daily cases with a case count flat at the moment, though the 8,727 new cases reported on Thursday is a single day record. 11,000 persons have died in Wisconsin, and we are averaging 33 new deaths daily. Vernon County is still seeing an average of 14 new cases daily, which is trending down slightly. For Wisconsin, the rate of vaccination is 93% fully vaccinated for ages 65 and up, and 70% fully vaccinated for all persons 12 years and older. This is important since current data shows unvaccinated with COVID as 5 times more likely to be hospitalized and 13 times as likely, more likely to die compared to those vaccinated. The latest variant, Omicron is far more transmissible. Hospitalizations are on the increase, but at a slower rate than new cases. Our Senator Ron Johnson, Republican, makes the news again with another nonsensical piece of advice. Standard gargle mouthwash has been proven to kill the coronavirus. It hasn't. Another deja vu top story, a school shooting update. Last month I referenced the Oxford High School shooting in Oakland County, Michigan. A 15-year-old shooter will be charged as an adult. The story gets worse. James and Jennifer Crumley, parents of shooting suspect Ethan Crumley, faced 4 counts each of involuntary manslaughter. Crumley's bought a semi-automatic handgun as a gift for their son, who days later allegedly used it to kill 4 of his Oxford High School classmates and wound 7 people on November 30th in the deadliest school shooting in more than 3 years. The decision to file charges against the parents of a school shooting suspect comes after investigators say they identified multiple failures to act on Ethan Crumley's increasingly troubling behavior in the days before the shooting. Authorities say that James Crumley bought the 9mm 6-hour SP-2022 pistol on November 26 while Ethan accompanied his father for the purchase. Jennifer Crumley captioned a post on her social media that read, "Mom and Sunday testing out his new Christmas present." McDonald told the Washington Post that the post was a reference to a visit to made to a gun range. But officials at Oxford High School first raised questions about Ethan Crumley's behavior on November 29th when a teacher noticed him using his cell phone to search for information on firearm ammunition. Jennifer Crumley did not respond when the school contacted via voicemail about her son's inappropriate search. Instead, she exchanged a text message with her son that read, "Lots of laughs. I'm not mad at you. We have to learn not to get caught." The morning of the fatal shooting, both parents were summoned to a meeting by school administrators after a teacher found a troubling note in Ethan's desk. McDonald said it contained a drawing of a semi-automatic handgun pointing at the words, "The thoughts won't stop, help me." The note including a drawing of a bullet with the words, "Blood everywhere." There was also a drawing of a bloody figure with two gunshot wounds and another drawing of a laughing emoji. Ethan altered the note, scratching out the most disturbing parts of it by the time the meeting with his parents began shortly after 10 a.m. on Tuesday, November 30th. Ethan brought his backpack to the counselor's office and noted that at no point did his parents ask about the recently purchased gun. Neither the Crumleys nor school officials searched the teen's backpack. The Crumleys resisted the idea of their son leaving the school at that time. Instead, Ethan returned to class with his backpack. "We've done nothing to slow school shootings or gun violence. Since 1999, children have committed at least 175 school shootings. Among the 114 cases in which the weapon source was identified by police, 77% were taken from the child's home or those of relatives or friends." Meanwhile, so what did we do in Washington, D.C.? President Biden seems to have a bad outcome for every good outcome, or if you want this to seem positive, a good outcome for every bad outcome. Afghanistan. U.S. troops are finally out of Afghanistan, but the exit was chaotic, which feels far too polite. COVID vaccination levels are high, but we were woefully unprepared for the holidays or the Omicron variant, not having an overwhelming and free stockpile of free rapid tests. Biden relied on vaccinations but skipped the need for rapid testing. The economy? It's hard to sort the politics into spin, but for every positive, holiday sales were up by 8.5% over last year in spite of higher prices, shortages, Omicron. Wages are up. Unemployment is down 4.2%. Unemployment was 6.7% last December, so the shift is huge. Labor force participation grew to 61.8%, the highest since March 2020. But we are still missing workers with a 1.5% lower participation rate from February 2020. The 4.2% unemployment rate for December is more encouraging, as both the numbers of people working was up by 1.1 million and the number of people not in the workforce fell by 473,000. And for those that track new job reports, the view is that new job creation is mediocre, but corrections to prior months have added 1 million new jobs. Another unemployment bubble to burst. I'm sure you also hear even well-intentioned people say no one wants to work anymore. But the truth is that 6 million persons a month are being hired through 2021. But since April 4th, 4 million persons have quit. That churn is huge and feeds into a total employment figures. It is more true to note that people are quitting to take another job. But also, political reports that the Bureau of Labor Standards showed that 5 million persons who have not returned are largely women who were, during the beginning of the pandemic, fired or left for personal reasons like health, childcare, or other related concerns. It feels like, politically, we are more interested in judging driving wedge issues than we are in fixing the underlying concerns like affordable childcare or affordable health care. Wage growth is up 6%, but inflation is also up 6%. The forecast for inflation is 4% for 2022 and 1.9% for 2023, which is the Fed target. Hopefully, wage increases remain while inflation recedes. U.S. equity markets closed the year at record levels. Gross domestic product grew at an annual rate of 5.6%, the best since 1984, after a 2020 decline of 3.4%. Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID recovery legislation helped the economic growth, as well as child poverty has been cut in half. But the economy looks more positive than not, but economics is really about how each of us is doing. Which brings us to yet another deja vu top story. Biden's Build Back Better legislation is in jeopardy after Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat from West Virginia, announced on Fox News he just couldn't bring himself to offer his final support after offering his final support. Stay tuned for January. Without passage of Build Back Better legislation, child tax credits payments will end, and economic growth is estimated to be lower by 1%. Our collective sense of freedom is twisted. People die that don't need to die. Another year with 100,000 opiate deaths, school shootings, gun deaths, civil rights, but only for the right people. No one died wearing a mask, but how many COVID deaths were avoidable while some promote their freedom with acts that put others at risk? 2021 ends with some alarming quotes. Greta Thunberg, blah, 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 representative and January 6th committee chair Our democracy was inches from ruin. Justice Kavanaugh settled law, settled as a president at the same Supreme Court. The Republican playbook is to sow distrust, distrust in government, distrust in elections. It's a lever for my minoritarian party to become the authoritarian government. It's not over yet, but the plan is working. Trust in government is down significantly. This is one of the root causes for resistance to vaccines. This is not new. Just like overturning Roe v. Wade has taken decades, so has the effort to sow distrust in government ever since Reagan's joke about, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Republicans don't have a plan any more recent than the Reagan era, but credit for perseverance. There is not a Republican platform ahead of the 2022 elections. Don't take my word for it. Republicans quietly decided to put whatever plan there was in a drawer and run against Biden's government while not offering any return targets. The news is all abuzz about Biden's ratings. Let's call it 43% favorable, 51% unfavorable. Still, isn't that better than Trump's final 34% positive and 62% unfavorable? I'm sure there was a Republican audit underway to allege that I am wrong. So while Republicans milk a 40-year game plan of small government, low taxes, and overturning Roe v. Wade, Dems managed to accomplish a few things but have yet to find a leader they like, but are happy to blame each other for what they didn't accomplish as if it is worse than our 4 years with the former guy. Because it feels good, a reminder that the Milwaukee Bucks won the 2021 NBA championship. Milwaukee Brewers pitcher Corbin Burnes won the National League Cy Young Award for best pitcher. And there is hope with the Green Bay Packers going into the playoffs with their final regular season game against the Minnesota Vikings on Sunday. The Packers currently have a best record of all teams at 12-3. Things can get better. Things can get worse. I wish all of us a better 2022. As Steve Inskeep said on National Public Radio, it's the end of 2021, which began about 5 years ago. Happy New Year to all of you.